Hello, everyone. We are your hosts, Susan, Katie, and Jill. We are longtime educators who are here to share with you all things education. We want to inspire you, help you innovate, dream new visions, and best of all, make you laugh. The education field is not an easy one, but we do it because we love kids and we want the very best for them. Join us as we laugh, learn, and get schooled on KLED & Co. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Get Schooled with KL Education & Company. Miss Susan, how you doing?
Doing fantastic.
We have a very special guest.
Yeah, we do.
One of my very best friends today. And I have a feeling that there are many listeners out there who are going to know you. So, you know.
The lucky ones will.
Miss Beth Huff is with us today. Author extraordinaire, national principal extraordinaire. I mean, you got some things on your resume.
Yeah. And it all started with you, my friend.
I know, right?
It all started with you. 2000 Bel Air Elementary Fellows
Shout
Program.
Out.
Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing, and we had so much fun.
I had no idea what I was doing. You did pretty well. So, is there something you were going to ask?
No, I did not know Beth. I mean, I'd heard of Beth.
Right, right.
Our districts are neighboring, and that's.
And she's pretty well known.
She's like, right? Hello. I know her, but
I got friends in good places.
Yeah, you do, girl.
Yeah.
But the first time I really got to meet her, I've met her really twice through you.
Yeah.
Once was for cocktails.
Yeah.
And then another one was just recently. We had dinner out.
Yes.
Remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. When I invited myself.
And I love that. I loved it because you might not remember this, but I was going through a certain situation with my friend Jill. And
I remember it very,
What was the situation?
I believe it was when, I can't remember the exact details, but I agreed with you.
The air purifiers.
Oh, right. The air purifiers. That's right.
So
now we could take a poll on that.
Okay. So for those people that have been listening to any, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag.
Any podcast we've ever done, you know to be true that there's a distinct difference between Jill and Susan. Mm-hmm. Like just a difference. And that's great.
That's why
this works so well.
Right.
But And so Jill comes to me. Jill comes at me one day and says,
I had forewarned you.
I'm at like recess duty, right? I'm outside.
And she brings things done.
She doesn't care. She's getting things done. She's
getting
making
things
time.
Done.
And she's
I was checking things
she's
off the list.
Sure not outside.
Oh, God, no.
She's not outside.
Not
no.
outside.
She comes at-
Not good with the outdoors.
No, yeah.
We've talked about
Yes, mm-hmm. She comes at me with this clipboard and says, here, I need you to take care of this. I printed it off because, you know, I hadn't done anything with the email. So this was her super nice way of like, you know, we're going to do this because you're not going to pretend like you don't see the email. So here it is. It's printed out. I need you to fill it out. I need you to know what rooms we're going to get air purifiers. Everybody will feel better. Everybody. They're free, Susan. These air purifiers are free. If we go through the right channels, we'll get all these air purifiers. And do you know how much better everybody's going to feel? And I may or may not have said, you mean you.
And she said exactly that.
And I said, yep. And I said, you mean you? And she said, well, there's others. There are other families
there
that
are other
will
people
think
like me.
And I said, I said, Jillian, I'll take care of it. So sure enough,
she calls me Jillian when it gets serious.
Oh,
yes. So I go through, I count and I think, okay, we need this size for this room. We'll need this size for this room. And the whole time, stupid air purifiers. The day I send the stupid email in with the order is the night we had dinner together. And I said to you, I said, after I'd known you for like 2 whole minutes, I thought, this is my girl. I said, so what would you do with the email for the free air purifiers? And you said, oh, I would delete that bad boy.
I would have. I did.
You did.
When I got that spam email from some company that's trying to rip off poor children.
Ask me how. Say that one more time. What's that company trying to do? Yeah. Ask me. Go ahead. An average number of emails I've gotten from that company since.
802, probably.
Probably.
Yes.
Yes, Jillian. Yes. And they don't go to her.
Of course
not. Because who sent?
Of course they don't.
And I have canceled, like officially.
Yeah. Many, many times we've tried.
I have canceled the order maybe 50 times. Like, I don't even tell you. Like, they email me weekly to confirm the order that we never ordered.
Sounds like a hostile work environment to me. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't gonna say that,
but now that you bring it up,
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be your witness.
So that's not really a funny. I felt like I needed to share that.
I remember when that. I remember that, and it was so funny
because I'm like, quickly she answered, and I was like, oh crap.
I know,
like,
you're
this
out.
Is gonna go right. Susan's gonna be like, oh, forever. Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember when we did that? Like, you shouldn't have done that. Did you see how fast Beth agreed? Yeah, like this will haunt me forever.
Oh, as just long as I keep getting those stupid emails.
Oh, I'm going to start sending them to Jill. I'll start forwarding.
Okay,
There you go. You're welcome.
Now you're going to bomb.
You're welcome.
This is
I'm going to schedule send them all too.
I mean, that's not even our funny story. You've got the funny
no,
story.
No, Beth has the funny
that's
story.
Just a catch up.
Well, yeah. There, I mean, really, especially if we're talking about Jill, like I have so many funny stories that are not, that's for a different podcast or a different whatever, but like, I will never, like when you said, think about your, like the story that just makes you laugh the most. And it really came from my first year and we had very different experiences. Jill and I are best of friends, but when we started teaching together, we both had, you know, Jill had this like amazing it freaked me out. It was like this clown that her mother found in one of her
special. My mother did a 3D clown off the bulletin board.
The clown's coming out of the wall.
The balloons, the children's names were on all the balloons.
Stephen King helped pay for it. But I mean, and so I walk in and then, and meanwhile in Beth's room, there's like literally a pile of things.
Yes.
And the teacher across the hall was like, I really didn't think you were going to make it. I was like, wow, thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks so much. But anyways, and so I really went into teaching and the idea, like I love kids. I love teaching. I mean, that was something I knew always that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a teacher or a nurse. And then I decided, you know what? I want to work with the living, with the breathing, with the, you know, with kids. And, so that first year I will never forget. I mean, we had fun in that class and we worked in a school that the kids that came through the doors, they didn't need us as much as maybe we needed them. They had, like, for the most part, they had a really great upbringing. They probably had deficit of their parents were very busy. And so sometimes they didn't have that. So I, you know, going in, I had one kiddo, and I remember his name, Jacob. I'll never forget I think he was number 6. I remember because we know, you know, we numbered you everybody. Number. That wasn't creepy at all.
We know why too, don't we, Jill?
So he walks in with this 5-gallon bucket and I'm like, what have you got going? Well, Miss Huff, I know you like animals and I know you like, so I've got this snake here that I found in my yard. And I was like, all right. He's like, yep. I couldn't get the snake to move this morning. So I put it in the microwave to warm it up. And I'm like, oh dear Lord. I was like, okay, well, you're not taking this thing home with you. I was like, I can't have you this Western hognose snake or whatever it was. I remember that at that time. I do actually like snakes. I love,
Hey, I'm going to stop.
She's nature.
The snake went into the microwave.
Oh yeah. He put it in there.
Then into a bucket.
Yeah. And brought it to school.
Then into
we just
class.
Needed to warm it up.
Right,
so it was a great learning lesson for science. We talked about cold-blooded animals and about how like cold blood. Yeah. So, so what got worse though with that is that, so the bucket stayed and I had put something on the top of it, but I didn't want to send it back home. Well, the next morning, snake was gone. And so I did not fit in well with, like, at this point in time, most of the staff were very, they had been there for a hot minute.
We were definitely the outliers.
The first day of school, the PE teacher came and asked me if I was even a real teacher.
Yeah.
I was like, well, actually, yes, I am. And I stood up to him and he ended up being like very, like we ended up being close after that. But, but anyways, and so I'm like, where is the snake? I was like, okay, friends, we're going to make a grid of our floor and we're going to all look for the snake. Well, that snake had gone because again, this was a school that had that open air concept. And so they had the partitions. That snake went under there into Bonnie Baker's room.
I'm out. I'm going to get fired.
And it did. And map testing. Map testing week. And it didn't really count for everything. Like you didn't have to pay in blood for map testing back then. So it was a little different. We were leaving children behind, right? I guess. Maybe. Let's talk about, my love for standardized testing. That'll be a whole nother episode, right? So anyways, that thing had gone underneath and it wrapped itself up in her coat underneath her desk. And I go over there and grab the thing. I'm like, he just wanted to wish you all well on your map test and take it out. The thing poops everywhere in the hallway. Oh, and I'm like, it was just, it, I couldn't make it up. And I'm like,
poop.
Yeah, they do at their little gland or whatever. It was not, that was a whole other science lesson. I mean,
that kind of is right there.
I mean, really, you're welcome.
Like, look,
you're
at
welcome,
me.
Bel Air Elementary. Look what I brought. Hands-on learning, project-based learning before it was
even a thing.
It wasn't even a thing. I think I might be the mother of that now. So that was again, my first year. And what's great though, is that I think for, if there's people on here that are newer or people that have lost their, like their buzz, you know, that's what Shonda Rhimes calls it in one of her podcasts I just listened to, you know, have fun. Like that, again, I thought that people looked down on me because I wasn't so serious, but here's the deal. I could outteach. Now I look back at that. I was like, I was a great teacher and I had no idea I was a great teacher because I felt I didn't fit in.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I still have relationships with so many of those teachers in that building, even though I only taught there 1 year, because again, when you teach from the heart, when you lead from the heart, when you love the people you serve and you truly love what you do, you know, that's when you're doing your best work. That's when those around you are most blessed. And that's when, you know, when you feel your best. You know, I had a person the other day just say, "Hey, what are you doing? Are you got like, did you get Botox or something?" I was like, "No, but thank you. I'll get that moisturizer again that I just got." But I have cut some toxic things out of my life, you know, and it's amazing how when you just live your authentic self and you're happy, like how much that influences other people.
Everything.
Right. So, so I think that, like, again, that was the snake story of 2000. It was something else.
2000.
I mean, I can't, I would like to find him, you know, I'd like to find
him
and see,
what's he doing now?
I don't know. Hopefully that wasn't like a precursor to some deviant behavior. I don't know. Like putting snakes in
wasn't.
Microwaves. I don't
he
know.
He was but trying to
no,
make
he blessed,
that.
He blessed his heart. He was trying so hard to be a good human. So yeah.
Ugh.
All right. So there you go. There's that one.
I like that one.
Takes me all the way back to the first days.
Oh my goodness. When I, unfortunately, like I have so many stories, but we'll just keep it at that one. Some were a lot more funny to me than other people too. So.
Always.
All right. Well, I want you to tell people more about your background. I mean, you have an extensive background.
Definitely.
You have done a lot in this life
of
education. So hit us.
I'll go back farther too. And I'll start, you know, and I know Jill, you've heard me speak before. And so I think that something that's important for people to know about me is like, I'm an accidental. Here I am. Right. I think statistically I should not be here. My parents were 14 when they found out they were gonna be pregnant or when they found out that they were going to have me and never got married. Right. And so in the late '70s in Missouri, that was not, when I speak nationally, I go, I know you guys have a mental model of Missouri, but that's young for Missouri too. So stop, you know, everybody always gives Missouri a lot of trouble, but you know, and so statistically speaking, again, I shouldn't be here with you guys. Yeah. I shouldn't be a principal. I shouldn't be working on my doctorate. I shouldn't be doing those things because statistically speaking, that's not typical. Right. And education is really the key to those situations. Education can help you, rise up or it can stifle you. And unfortunately I had teachers that did both and that's really what propelled me into education. And so I had two amazing grandparents that really were instrumental in providing me just inspiration. And my two grandmothers were definitely my mentors. My mom is an amazing human as well, but you know, when you're 14, like I struggle as a not 15-year-old trying to parent right now. So I can only imagine what it was like for her. But I think her parenting was much like my first year of teaching though too, is she didn't know the rules. And so sometimes when you don't know the rules, you build a bond of love that you don't even, you know, recognize. So anyways, fast forward, you know, I went to school on a music scholarship here at Mizzou actually, because we were a family in poverty. I didn't know what that meant, right? I didn't know, I just knew that in middle school, right? Because in elementary is a great equalizer in my opinion. And now, especially being a secondary person, I started out in elementary and moved up to secondary, but middle school is when I knew, I knew that, you know, my friends had glass in their windows and we had plastic over it. My friends didn't sleep with their sister, but I had to sleep with my sister. My friends, you know, so I just knew those things were different. And that's when school became much less fun for me. I loved school. I loved learning. I learned how to read when I was four. I took the Little House books and just learned how to read. I just figured it out. And I just kind of always had that drive of that, you know, and my mom's always said reasons or results. That was her big thing. Reasons or results. You know, your life is not the way that traditionally or like I'd hoped it would have been for you, but you have reasons or results. And so that is something that always stuck with me. So every time I went through some type of a tragedy or hardship, I just always thought that. And that's what helped me to persevere. And that's what I've tried to like really help others you know, understand as well. I struggle as a mom sometimes because I feel like I don't make my kids struggle maybe as much. They might not agree, but like, I feel like my kids have really had a pretty sheltered life. Yeah. And a big part of that is because I didn't want them to suffer or go through some of the things, the hardships that I went through. But my house was, always had an aspect of love to it, even though there were hard things. So I went to Mizzou on a music scholarship, loved that, loved being there. And then found out I could play the piano. I tried really hard and that didn't work out. That was my first experience with the final is the grade. And I flunked that sucker. And I was like, you know what? I can't do this. I cannot do this. And so I went into elementary ed, graduated, and then did the fellows program with Jill. Yeah. So we did our master's, our first year of teaching, loved teaching, taught in Jeff City for 2 years and then moved to Fulton. And then I did, Missouri had a program called Select Teachers as Regional Resources. And so unfortunately that's gone, but it was a life-changing experience. And I think if you would look at the data, it's kind of like the start or the fellows data, the original fellows program, 97% of fellows, however many years later, were still in education. And so, and they've changed that. And I don't, so I don't know what the statistics are now. The STAR program was exactly the same way. And so that program was, you had a year of extensive PD. So I worked alongside Rita Pearson and Bob Marzano and so many of the other greats, and PD, and then went back and applied. I think that's huge, right? And a lot of times with PD, we go to PD and then we just don't necessarily, some people apply it and others don't, right? So and you two both know the value of really embedded PD. So anyways, the second year I was on sabbatical. And so I provided free PD from the Regional Professional Development Center to about 40 different schools on whatever topics they wanted, from classroom management to writing workshop to, you know, whatever. They said, do this. I figured it out and did it. And I am so blessed because that was my leadership degree that I never like got credit for. Right?
Absolutely.
And
you get to see everybody.
Well, you do.
It is the best PD.
It was phenomenal. And I'm so glad that I had that opportunity. And then, you know, but I had like three schools that I hated going to. I could not, I would drive up to the schools and my knuckles would get white. My stomach would hurt. And I started to realize very quickly that we all know that teachers are the most important aspect to children. We know that, like, when you have a great teacher that, but we, the thing I learned in those three schools is great teachers don't like working for horrible leaders. Nope. And there were three principals that were just horrible, and I won't name them, but I said, my gosh, this has got to be better than this. And so at that time in my home district, there was a principal opening, and I'll never forget.
I remember talking through this with you.
You did.
You were trying to decide what to do.
I mean, I made lots of T-charts. Yep. But all that, I mean, ultimately.
It was such a good decision.
Yeah, ultimately decided to apply. Didn't have a degree. Yep. Didn't have certification, right? And again, that's another thing that as women, there's a great book that's called Brave, Not Perfect, and by Rashma Saljani. I might've messed her name up, but she is a creator of Girls Who Code. Phenomenal. And she said, men typically are not ready when they make decisions. Like just typically just when you look at things, they go for women, like they're 50% ready. I'm like, oh, why not? Let's do it. And then, but women are like, no, we gotta be 100% ready. And so I remember that, like kept going that, and obviously it wasn't. So I blew past that, but still I didn't think that I would get, I didn't think I would get it. And when I did, and that's when we were working on our specialist program together, like it was next level. But with that, and you cut me off when you, cause I'm just, there's so many levels of this and layers to this. And I think, you know, I think a lot of times people just maybe look at me at surface level and go, okay, you're a national principal or whatever. I was like, no, but there's lots of layers to get here. And I think that especially people that are struggling in their roles have to realize, hey, you don't learn when it's easy. I mean, you just don't learn when it's easy and you don't grow when it's easy. But so 2 weeks before I started my very first principalship, and I mean, I was ready to go. I had just turned 31. I had a 4-year-old at home. I was just ready to go. We got a letter from the federal government and I was like, oh yay, they're welcoming to the principalship. Congratulations. Oh no, this was 2008. The test did matter, right, at this time. And so our school was identified as a school in improvement, failing school, right? I had to get the right F word. There'll be another one here in a minute. So we had to offer school choice in a very small town where there was only three elementaries, and it was a gut punch and just devastating. And at that moment, you know, I was ready to lead with culture, and data, I know you both love data. I know Jill definitely dances with data a lot, but data like represent humans. And, and when you chase data, you lose some of the human factor of it, unless you're really good at putting that correlation together. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so that's what I did though, because I knew we had to get off that list and we did. But it sacrificed relationships. It sacrificed, you know, data walls are great, but again, we have to remember, there's so much more than the number that's on whatever, you know. Yep.
Anyway, so we got off that list, but then that was at a detriment to my livelihood, and I was done. I had had another baby in that process, which, you know, that really adds a lot of energy to your life. And so in many ways, right. And, like I decided I was going to leave education. I decided at that point I was going to go into nursing. You looked at Lincoln and there was like a late in life, nursing. I'm like, I'm not geriatric yet. I mean, whatever. And so, but I had gone to a conference with one of my colleagues, and it was a principal conference. I'd never gone to a conference that truly like a national level conference that was actually just for principals. And it changed my life. I met some people, developed a professional learning network, and really started using Twitter to help me connect with other principals, to connect with other educators, to connect with the world in general. And it changed my life. And I also, that's when I first heard about Teach Like a Pirate, because I'd never heard about that. And I was very snarky about it at first. I was like, well, I've taught like a champion and a rock star and my hair on fire. Like, why pirate, right? It's another stick. And one of my friends said, no, just watch this person on Skype, this new thing called Skype, right? Little did I know, foreshadowing that would be. But I ended up watching this person. Well, I had gone back to my room actually and Googled Teach Like a Pirate. And I found an article written by Shelley Burgess called Lead Like a Pirate. And when I read it, I connected so quickly because the P was her passion.
Yeah.
Right. And I was, that's what my problem was. Yeah. I had lost my passion because I'm not passionate about standardized tests. Yeah, I wasn't passionate about people coming in and telling me I needed to do these programs with the kids hated. I mean, the kids hated. My son was there doing these things and he's like, Mom, I'm miserable. And it's like, it's so hard. You know, people that really don't know anything about education coming in and telling us how to run our buildings. Right. Yes. And I'm all for accountability. Don't get me wrong. There are ways to hold people accountable, without scarring children with these tests that like, you know, that matter a lot, unfortunately but I think there's change happening there. I really see it. I'm advocating deeply for it on several different levels. And I see some good things hopefully happening to where we can look at growth models versus one and done. Right. But anyways, that's again, another time I'm here. So back to the story. So after coming back from this conference, I was changed and I recognized that culture always has to come first. And I really like embodied my authentic self. And I came in and I had fun and the kids had fun. We did, our data was rocking it. We had since become an exemplary professional learning community. Like we had things where they needed to be. And then my superintendent is like, hey, we need a middle school principal. And I said, hey, I'll be on your interview panel. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, middle school was not the time of my life. I hated it. Uh-huh. Again, I told you guys why. That's when I knew I was different and I knew that I didn't belong. And so I just finished my 8th year as middle school principal. So you know how that went, right? And our middle school was in a very similar place. We were a focused school. They changed the F word, like I said. Yes. And so we had to go through much of the same. But we started with culture. We really did. I mean, just the aesthetics. We changed we made sure the school looked nice on the inside. We talked about how do we treat each other? How do we talk to each other? How do we talk to the kids? How do we, you know, looking at culture and then how do we hold ourselves accountable, you know? And so it doesn't mean, I think sometimes people mistake culture with lowering expectations and that's so not it. I mean, culture is it hits you in the face as soon as you walk in and it either makes you want to keep going or walk back out. And, you know, a culture built on trust has high expectations, holds people accountable. And I'm excited. You know, I start next week at Capital City High School and just being in that environment already, I feel so much of that happening. They have amazing data processes there, but they also, you know, the kids are happy. Like the first time I was out front, they're fist bumping me already. I'm like, okay, this is great. Again, it's just, you know, and not ever, because my oldest son's like, Mom, I don't want to fist bump the principal. I was like, I don't make people touch me if they don't want. I'm not like a creeper. Like, come on. So, I mean, but again, I think sometimes too in education, we assume the older the kids get, the less they want to enjoy school and connect with their people. And, you know, they're
the less they need you.
100%. And it's like, no, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when I have subs come in, which there's quite the shortage, right? But they always like, if I have them do any type of supervision, like, what do you need me to do at breakfast supervision?
Right.
I need you to act like you like the kids. I need you to go in and act like whatever they have to say is the most important thing. Because what's great about that is if that's not your natural, because especially when you get secondary, your content's kind of why you went into it, right? You're really passionate about whatever. And so sometimes you forget in elementary, we love kids. We just want to teach them all the things, right? Mm-hmm. And not that you don't love kids in the secondary world. It's just a different focus, right? It's a different focus. But again, like the more you do it though, the more you do it. And that's what, you know, I just, you want to connect with people.
Yeah.
And I'm not a natural extrovert. People just automatically assume that in me. I just have worked really hard at it because it just makes people feel connected. Now I have to tone it down because there's also kids that they don't like that. So that, I mean, for the most part, that's my journey. And in middle school, at Full Middle School, same thing. We worked hard. We looked at our grading practices first. We read 15 fixes for broken grades. It was our very first thing we did together as a staff. And then we really recognized that we had deficit. We were using deficit language. We were lowering our expectations for our most marginalized children and our most marginalized teachers at times. And it's like, whoa, no. When you lower the bar, people trip on it. And we've got to make sure to have high expectations and then build stair steps. And I use my story a lot because if people just looked at my story and said, oh, she's not supposed to be here, or poor Beth, she doesn't have, you know, glass in her windows. No, hold me accountable, but then, you know, hold my hand to get there so that I can. And that's the problem. A lot of times people just, you know, say, oh, well, here, let me give this gift of whatever to you. Absolutely. No. Let me work hard for it because I'll keep working hard. So, and here I am, I'm moving to the, you know, I've been 8 years. So 7 years in elementary as a principal, 8 years in middle, and then getting ready to start. I don't know if it's going to be the first of 9 years or what I'm doing, if I'm going to stay with patterns or what, but I'm excited to be in the high school world. Sure.
I'm excited for you. I think new chapters are fun. They're exciting. Are. And you get to do new things and set new expectations, set new goals.
And you grow, right? I mean, you grow, like I think you think of the fish. When you change the bowl size, the fish grows. And I think for me, it's time for me to grow and you know, it's gonna be hard. I know that. I know that. But I'm surrounded by such amazing people that that's a good thing.
Yeah. So awesome. All
right, that was only question one. So sorry.
That was only question one. That's fantastic.
You can skip some of them. That's okay. Yeah. There's just a long story. I mean, there's a long thing. I left a lot of pieces out. You really left a lot of pieces out too.
But I think, yes. And I, when I talk to people about you, you know, everyone loves you. And so, you know, to say, when I say, yeah, Beth and I started year one together, like, you know, Beth, like, I'm like,
that's true.
I know Beth, everybody. And I go, yep. Like we were there day one and we was killing it then. And I was crying in my room down the hallway.
Jill was walking with me when I had my second son.
That's right.
I was in labor up at the hospital and Jill was walking with me up and down the hallway, up and down the hallway, up and down the hallway. And so, that's the thing too. And I think that's another piece of this that people, like, I know there's like a big push right now to where, you know, you only work your contract hours. It's only a job, whatever. Okay. That's fine. And I respect that. I've recognized one as I lead, especially different generations.
Sure.
But I think when you have friends that you work with, that you connect.
Yeah.
And again, we only worked 1 year in the same building together, but we have been friends for longer than I haven't been friends with you really at this point now, because we're still in our 30s, right?
Yeah, you're still in your 30s.
Again, that's the thing is I think that you just, when you can connect like that and when you go through some of those things together, those work friends become life friends and we'll
family.
Keep, yeah, exactly.
For sure. So, I mean, education is going through a lot right now. It's tough. It's a tough,
especially here in Missouri.
Tough place to be. It's tough field to be in. It's always been tough. But I think right now it's especially challenging. So what would you say are some current positives that are happening?
I think, you know, I spoke to this, one of the bills that they're looking at, and I think it will go through, is really looking at how we look at assessment, right? Yeah. I hope that that's something that there's some bipartisan support here in our state for. Had the chance a couple weeks ago with MOASP to talk to some of the legislators. And so I think they see they're coming together on that, which is exciting. Right. I see national recognition that there's problems. Right. So, and I know that that seems, but like, I think people recognize, oh my goodness, we really are at a hard time.
Yeah.
I see people recognizing we might want to change the way we're doing things in education too. I see the innovation is it's kind of ripe for innovation right now. Unfortunately, we're just exhausted. So it's hard to innovate when you're exhausted, right? Because you end up spending more time. I mean, it's just hard to do that. So I think those are some things. I think there's some really unique, CTE, I think, is another area when we're looking. Yeah. I just was in San Diego and had the chance to, sorry, I'm not sure exactly what's going on.
It's okay. No.
Okay, good. You're fine. Okay, great. So basically, in San Diego, we did a service learning project. And so we went out to a school and the school had created pathways. And some of the schools in North Kansas City have done this too, but basically a kid chooses their pathway. So if you're a computer science pathway,
I've heard about
like, North, and it's this. So cool because it doesn't matter. You know, when I was coming up, it was college,
right?
This or this, these are your three options. And really what changed in this is that everyone is CTE. Like it doesn't matter. Cause that's career tech. I mean, like that's, everyone's gonna have a career. Right. And so it was so neat to talk with the kids about, you know, some of the theater kids, like they were like, they were talking about their econ classes that they were taking, but it had a theater, like it had the arts. Like, so instead of all of us taking the same econ class, what's your pathway? What's your pathway? What's your pathway? And when you see kids and the building wasn't, I mean, it was a California open air school, like where you walk around outside. But what was so neat is the retention rate of teachers in the school is super high because the kids love being there. The kids are much more in charge. And when kids are happy, teachers are happy. It's a lot easier to teach kids that see the relevance and the work that they're doing. And so it's like, we have to rethink the way that we're doing education. And we also, and this is, again, it may, and I don't really care if it makes people mad or not. I believe it to be true. Teaching is a trade. Why are we not considering like teaching as a trade and getting kids as young as freshmen and sophomores? Why are we not looking, when we look at our vocational, like, why is teaching not part of that? We do that for nursing. We do that. Like, why wouldn't we want to teach that trade? I think that we're really missing the boat when we think that we have to send a child to a very expensive 4-year university. And I get that there's reimbursement, but here's the deal. And again, I know that I don't hold back. As a child of poverty, as a child that was under-resourced, I couldn't figure that stuff out.
Right.
I struggled just filling the application out. So that's great that you're going to tell me I'm going to get reimbursed later. It's not going to happen.
No.
And so I think that's the part too. And it's not because it's not a like, oh, because in poverty, you're not going to do this. No, it's just, it's truly, that's not the middle upper class. Like that's not the life I lived where I could just easily navigate this form. Or, you know, you think of the literacy pieces or you think of the whatever. So again, what I've noticed places doing that's a positive though too is our counselors in the high school are really figuring out how do we support this? How do we figure out how to support kids with these types of things? So that's a good thing too. But anyways, nobody, and at the end of the day, we need our country to step up and support teachers. I'm overhearing, well, the teachers just complain about it. Yeah, the teachers complain about it because they're getting their tails kicked. That's why. Right. I was assaulted by 2 students this year. Two students physically assaulted me for the first time ever in 23 years as an educator, right? And that's appalling. It should never have happened, but it did. And what's unfortunate is the very first thing typically when I tell the story is, and I didn't even do anything to deserve it. Like, I shouldn't have to say that. I shouldn't have to say I wasn't breaking a fight up or I wasn't. Right. No, I had 2 kids literally come after me and attack me. And what's so sad is, I mean, nothing really that detrimental happened to them. I wouldn't want that. I mean, I'm not out there wanting, but again.
But you still, there's a, they can't go into a community okay like thing, that. Right.
And so that's,
you
know,
so that's like a life lesson. You don't actually get to do that. Mm-mm. Like we realize you feel very safe here, safe right. enough to do that. However, that's here's just not okay. You
know? And our systems are so understaffed and under-resourced with our juvenile justice systems and our family services. But I think those are the things, again, our country is not super supportive of teachers and talking up education and the beauty. Yeah. Now, there's pockets of positivity there, but we've got to make sure that, that we not only talk positive, but pay our teachers. You know, it's appalling to go, you know, at the work that I do at the national level, teachers make a livable wage in a lot of states, but not here. And we got to do better. I mean, we're dead last and that's not what we want. 50 is not good. We want to be, we'd like to be in the, at least the tens. Come on, let's get up there. So I have found my voice and I guess, you know, I think that's another piece that we've got to figure out how to do is give educators the mic and make sure that people are advocating. But we're so busy doing the work. It's hard. When do you take time to do that? Right.
Right. Right.
But I have found my, and again, I'm blessed to be part of the national and our state secondary principal association in the elementary as well. I'm just don't work as much with them. They have such an amazing advocacy platform that it's not just a whiny, you know, like, oh, woe is me. It's, hey,
we have
these
ideas.
Are the things we need you to support so that we can do our job, really focusing on teacher retention, focusing on mental health, right? Of our students and our staff.
Yeah.
And then infrastructure, of course, too, because it's hard to teach in schools that are falling apart. So,
right.
So anyways, I kind of went all over the place.
Well, I mean, because I was going to ask you next, like, what do you think the biggest challenges are?
I think retention of teachers.
Me too.
Retention of quality teachers.
I'm really worried about that.
I am incredibly worried because we're not talking about just little tiny, you know, a little prairie home where I know you, you worked. I mean, because they struggle with teacher retention
they
all the time.
They can't ever get applicants.
But then you look at right now, I mean, in both of the schools, in the school that I'm finishing up, the school that I'm going into, we still have openings.
Yeah.
You know, when we had our meeting with the legislators a couple of weeks ago, every single person in the room raised their hand when I said, who still has an opening? And,
multiple,
you know,
openings.
That's the thing. And so I think that's the part too, where, you know, if we can't have quality teachers, you know, and I mean, having a seventh grader next year, I'm thinking about, okay, it was likely that there might be one teacher in his whole middle school career that might not be certified, right?
Oh, there's gonna be a lot.
There, I mean, I would assume that he'll have at least two, if not more, that aren't certified.
Yeah.
I mean, we're at a point where we're having to hire teachers that don't even have degrees in anything.
Correct.
Right? Which again, that's, I've never thought, you know, as 8 or 16 years ago when I first started interviewing, we would have 200 applicants for an elementary opening.
Right. Always.
So, but again, why, you know, when you can, I think COVID also showed us that is that I am very marketable as a teacher.
Yes.
I'm very marketable and I can make more than $40,000 a year. Yeah. Right. And so I think that's the thing. And I think still again,
and go to the bathroom whenever I want.
Well, exactly. Well,
go to the bathroom whenever I want. Yeah.
And drive,
I want,
like maybe go to the bank and
like a human
not
being.
Feel like I, And I think that's the part where I would encourage those that are so hard on teach, come in,
right.
Come and walk substitute for a day.
Right.
Come in and see what's really going on in the buildings. And I think the other big challenge is just the politicalness that we've that continued. And really it's BS. It's people
it
make stuff up.
Yeah.
And I know I've done enough research on it. I know where it's coming from. It's not even really like Republican Democrat. It's so underground and the trends come up and it's like just kind of the stupid cat litter thing. Like I just thank God it finally went away, but I'll never forget because someone had said that we had that in our school. Yes. And at the sixth grade orientation meeting last year, I said, here's the deal, friends. I don't ever use this award as like a platform, but I'm pretty sure if we had kitty litter boxes at our school, the national principal of the year, there would be videos and pictures.
Right.
So stop it. Like that's what, like we have to stop the dumb, like the dumb that can, when people say, and that's just society in general, right? Like when people say stuff that now could it be, it could, I think also something might happen in one place and then we automatically assume that's
everywhere.
Right? Sure. And so, and then what ends up happening is kids get hurt. And at the end of the day, the more energy I'm spending chasing this stuff, I'm not serving my kids, not serving my staff. I'm chasing all of this other stuff. And so, and I think that's the biggest challenge is our eye needs to stay on how do we ensure that we're educating our kids so they can be amazing contributors to our society so that we can grow as a country. I mean, that's the whole bottom line. Right. So, and it would be awesome if they also got along well with people. I mean, and actually recognize that you can disagree and still, you know,
still
get along
kind.
And be kind with each other and, you know, or just, you don't have to, there's some quote, you don't have to throw a stone at every dog that barks. Right. Yeah. And I think that for me has given me peace is social media. Like I kind of just, I see things on there and I'm just like unfriend, snooze. Like I just, I have the power to do that though too. And you don't have to, again,
you don't have to engage
and you don't have to entertain every argument that comes your way. So,
So thinking about like the next 10 years, what do you think, what do you see in education in the next 10 years?
I really, some of the things I've talked about already, I think we're going to have to get very, well, we're going to have to figure out how to fund teachers. I mean, we're going to have to figure out how we're going to pay teachers a livable wage. I personally, and again, this is me, not everybody agrees with this. I think just the way we do school makes no sense. I'm a huge advocate for year round school, not because I want my summers off, but I think that if we went to school the whole year,
it just makes sense.
It would help mental health.
Yeah.
I think it would be, you have more breaks.
Yeah.
So I think that would help attendance. If you knew you go six, I say, I don't know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever, 9 weeks, take a few weeks off, you know, then, I mean, we have so many families that take vacation. Like when we talk about attendance and this whole attendance, I struggle with attendance because I recognize that good culture breeds good attendance. But I also recognize in our country and in our state, attendance isn't held to the, like there was no way my mother was going to ever let me stay home for my birthday.
Right.
But the amount of kids that stay home for their birthday, I'm like, well, no wonder everybody wants all these presents when they're old now because mom took you out of school and took you to Dom. I mean, like that's just not, that's just not in my, so again, I think as a society, we look at it differently, but the state measures that and you get points deducted if you're not at a certain place. And so,
and it's super hard to control.
It is.
You can do all you want to do. You can sing, dance, you can offer incentives, but at the end of the day, that's really not something you can control. And sometimes the kids are out for good reasons.
Well, completely.
You know, completely. Like, yeah. if they are going overseas, if they are going to see something, if someone is sick, like there are multiple reasons
that happen. You know, I 100%. Went to Alaska to speak and I took my kids with me because
they should
go to Alaska. Right? But again, like, and that's the part too. So I'm not like begrudging that, but like if we had those breaks, it'd then be so people much could easier do to do those yes, things. And I think we just, and even as like, for me, I've been at a 9-month contract, 10 and a half, 11, and now I'm 12 and I have a different summer experience because I'm not in a rush to get everything done. Yeah. And I think if teachers truly had time to breathe and to like work and do PD and do those things in the summer, however it worked. But again, I just struggle. And I'm like, people always ask me about 4-day school week. Here's the deal. I'm not against it. But at the same time, like, I think it would work really well if you went school like all year round too. So I think people have to recognize that, you know, with local control, the local communities have to figure out what's best for them. But I don't know. I think really the CTE piece, like helping, we really got to kind of, when it's working again, look at models that are working and producing great things. And how can we emulate that? Like that's, to me, innovation isn't like coming up with a brand new idea. No. It's really iterating an idea that's already there and making it a little bit better or making it, you know? And so I think that's the part too, is that we've got to figure that out for sure.
Yeah. The current system though, I think we can all agree is not working very well.
Not at all. Well, there's just so many things like, why are we doing it? I know. Well, we have to do it, or it's statute, or it's whatever. Okay, fine. Well, I'm just going to, you know, and that's what I would also say to people is like, I for so many years was scared to use my voice. I didn't. And a lot of times because I thought I was ignorant. I thought I didn't know something or whatever. Right. And so I've learned though, if not me, then who?
Right.
If not me, then who? Right. And then you also have to realize no matter what role you're in, someone is looking up to you.
Yeah.
And you are giving someone confidence whenever you take time to advocate for what's right and what's good. And just, you have to also, and for me, like I am one that is very quick to reach out now to a person that has a completely different view than me.
Right.
Because a lot of times they just don't know.
Yeah.
Misinformation breeds misunderstanding. And so it's like, how can we make sure that we are spending some time doing that?
But, yeah, totally. So last question. Okay. Well, kind of, I'm going to ask you one last thing. What can leaders do to help staffing kids and families? So what would be your advice to them? And
my advice to leaders is, again, is like to recognize that, like, why you went, like, go back to that first
why are
year
you here?
Teaching.
Yeah.
Why are you here? What's your why behind it?
Yeah.
And really, I know that piece gets like, kind of like, oh, let's talk about our whys. No, again, it's passion.
Yeah.
You can't fake passion. And so you've got to go back to that and reignite what makes you tick.
Right.
And recognizing too that what makes Susan tick is different than what makes you tick. And so I need to lead you a little bit differently than I lead you.
Yeah.
And I know that people always talk about the golden rule. Well, I'm all about the platinum rules. You don't want to be, I'm not going to treat you the way I want to be treated. Yeah. Right. I think you'd like that though, because we get along pretty well.
Yeah,
right.
We
but
yeah,
still
we
like,
we're good.
You got to know your people.
Yes.
You to be served. Mm-hmm. And again, never forget, we are here to serve.
Yes.
And one of our mantras of NASSP is service over self. And that's our board that we sit on. And,
incredible.
And I think that's another piece too, is I think some people go into leadership because they want that accolade or they want that title or whatever. No, service over self, and recognizing that, you know, it's be your authentic self as well, but like recognizing we are here to serve. And it's got to truly be shared leadership too. Like, how do we bring out the leadership in every single human, whether it be the custodian, whether it be the nurse, whether it be the ninth grader, whether it be the kindergartner, how do we get everyone to see a leader in themselves? Because when you have strong commitment of those that you serve, there's nothing you can't do, right? There's nothing you can't, people want to be involved in decision-making and
you see it. I mean, you know those leaders that go in because they're about service over self, and you know the ones that are.
And if you're not, then get out, because you make the rest of us look bad. That's why when I cringe every time I see any meme about a principal, because I'm like, I love my job. I'm proud to call myself a principal. I don't make up other titles for myself, like a lead learner or whatever. No, I'm not the lead. No, I struggle because like I'm proud to have that title.
Exactly.
And I think that's the problem is, but we have people doing some really dumb things that then the rest of us get this, you know.
Yeah.
And there are special birds in every profession, right? And you just have to figure out, like, again, and I don't know, but again, the people that need to be called out too, though. And I know that's hard, but really, I don't know that called out's even the right thing. A lot of folks just don't realize. A lot of times people, and I'm seeing this happening hugely right now, are getting promoted that have no business to be promoted because of the shortages.
There's nobody available.
So you're putting people in positions. Yeah. Yes. And I was like, could you imagine if they did that with heart surgeons?
Yeah. No. There you go.
Is that terrifying?
What you just said, we have talked about it. I mean, to like maybe 100 times over the last three months.
I would not want anyone. No. I wouldn't. I mean, in that heart's
if they've
big,
never like, been to school.
I wouldn't want you taking my appendix out either. I know the appendix isn't as important. No. If you went ahead and got your degree in, you know, biology. No.
But tag you're in because there's nobody else on the bench. And unless we go back and fix the things you were talking about, then there's never anybody.
Yeah. So
that's my biggest worry. I just think that, you know, people are going to continue to innovate in their own ways. And they're going to need help to do that. And we are just coming to a critical shortage in capacity
of people to be able to help, you can only put so much on people's backs. And that's the part where I think people don't realize is you have great people in education still.
Right.
But they can only take so much of the burden of trying to. And it worries me because again, I think that there are some great things happening, but that gets lost in all the other noise at times. So, but again, that's why I keep doing what I do, right? That's why I keep pushing on. That's why I will, you know, continue to be a strong advocate for education, and for teachers. I think that it shouldn't be us versus them. I think that's unfortunately been the narrative that's created about
it.
That's some BS too, because again, we're all on the same, we're all on the same team for kids. I mean, that's what we are here for every day is for our kids. And again, I recognize my role. If I support the adults, they can best support the kids. I recognize that. And I think a lot of principals forget because they go into that from teaching and they're like, oh, I need to still, you still need to obviously love the kids and be right there. But love the adults more, support the adults more so that the adults could then in turn take care of the kids.
And it's not about whether or not you want to hang out with that person at happy hour. It's what can that person do to help you serve kids better?
Completely.
And that's a different thinking.
So quickly, best advice for teachers as they are like, can I do this one more year? Can I stay? What would you say to them?
I would say, I think the biggest thing is please do. We need you. We need you. Right. And this is the hard because I know a lot of people have special situations. I mean, the sky, you can go anywhere right now, pretty much. Right? There's openings.
Absolutely.
We've got them right now at Capital City High School. We'd love to have you. find the prince. Like, it's okay to leave. It's okay to leave. Mm-hmm. Before you give up, try to find somebody else. It might be the wrong place. It might be the wrong, whatever, you know. Right. And again, don't be scared of your principal. If you're, you know, a lot of times your principal, like for me, I feel like the past 3 years I've been the worst principal ever because I am also right there trying to survive. I'm trying to keep my head above water. And it's, I hate it because the teacher's like, I feel bad even bringing anything to you. I said, do it anyway. So reach out to your principal. Don't be scared of them. And if you are scared of them, go to find another
one. It's the wrong spot.
Go someplace else, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the thing is just recognizing that it is not, it doesn't, you know, there are places that have systems and structures in place that might better fit your needs. And that's okay.
So huge. We talked about that on another podcast. And I got to the point when I was hiring teachers, like I would just be really upfront about my strengths and my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Like, I need you to know this is what you're going to get from me, but this is what you won't get from me. And I think that's key too. If you're not okay with that, I so respect it, but let's not start this marriage. Right.
Well, Do you know what I mean? That's huge. And I recognize that the older I get too, is like, I don't mind helping you, but I can't deal with whiny. Like I need
you're going to have to get somebody else
that can deal with that. Cause I cannot,
If you need to be told how great you are 25 times a day, and if you're going to have to, I'm not your girl.
Right.
But man, I will hug you. I will love you. I will tell you thank you. Like, but.
And you need me. You need me to take you to the hospital. I have one teacher. I love her so much. She was by herself. I'll take you to the hospital. I'll sit with you at the hospital. I'll do those things in a heartbeat. But like, so some parent yelled at you. Okay. Cry, get it out, cuss. All right. Sounds great. Now what are we going to do? Copy me on every email to them and I'll make sure and take care of it. I think we need more administrators. That's another piece too. I know that I already answered that question, but administrators be the protect the Teflon, them. Like
yes.
you got it. Like,
you got to take care of your people.
That's been so different for me. You know, I think sit down with your new teachers and make parent phone calls.
Yeah.
Sit down and help teachers because I will never, ever allow parents to.
You don't get to talk to my people
or
like that.
Or cuss at teacher. It's not okay. But at the end of the day, so we still can't say, guess what? We're not talking to you, parents. Nope. Sometimes we can do that whenever it gets to a really crazy time. But like, I think that's the other part too, is don't like make sure your teachers feel supported when you're in those places, but you also have to make sure, you know, I mean, you establish that expectation with your parents as well. I think that's another piece that I didn't always do a good job with. And I'm learning to do better with that now, is just saying, hey, you're not going to speak to our folks like this. You're not going to do it. Not happening.
We don't talk to each other like that.
Mm-mm, no.
You're really good at that.
But we've talked, like, I mean, I can tell you now for certain, I had great teachers in the building I was in. Jill had great teachers in the building she was in that loved her. Those great people would have not loved me.
Oh, completely.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, they wouldn't have. And that's okay. So I just think back, like, and especially to these young teachers that I would talk to, because, you know, where we were, you might have, like, all three of us as principals might have interviewed the same person. And so that's why I got really good at just being really upfront about my faults and my strengths. Because here's the deal. If this is your principal, I'm not your girl.
Right.
Like, I will never lead like she leads. Yeah. Now, we can have the same backbone in terms of what we feel like the hills we're going to die on. Don't misunderstand that. But how we get there is different. Mm-hmm. And I just worry so much about our young friends that are going into education and they go to the first building that offers them a job and they make the assumption that this is what it's going to be like, instead of doing exactly what you said, Beth, and just don't give up. If that place wasn't home, that doesn't mean there's not another place that is.
Try something different.
Before you leave. Yeah.
No, I feel very much the same way. And I think that's the biggest thing, is you just, you know, it takes a little bit. And I think it's, you know, I'm really looking right now at like the effect of principals on teacher retention. That's my dissertation topic. And so I at first really wanted to look at the generational differences, because like the way I lead my new brand new baby teachers, it's different.
I know.
Right? It's so different. And so, but I recognize it's just in general, there are commonalities though between what principals do to keep teachers. And again, it centers in trust. Like again, no matter how we lead,
they have to feel like
they can trust us, even if our personalities are different and our quirks are different and our trust is really what makes or breaks, you know, those pieces. And so we have to recognize, and we wrote about it in Lead Like a Pirate. It's like, you've got to make sure that you are, it's like oxygen. It's always around you. You don't recognize it's there, but you're building it. And what can take years to build can be lost in seconds. And it's that's the hard part. And that's probably when people ask me, what's the most stressful thing about being a leader? It's that, is that I don't get to have bad moments all the time, but yet you're human, right?
Yeah.
So it's nice, again, knowing your authentic self, knowing who you are, knowing your triggers is huge, because I can say, like, one of my new associate principals is like, here's the deal. I'm going to vent for a second, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with you, but I'm fine.
You don't have to take action on it.
Right.
It's totally, different. Totally different.
We need to clear the air with a purifier, don't we?
Oh, yeah. Ba-dum-bump. And well, that's right back. A wrap.
And there we are. And there we are.
You come back anytime. Oh,
Beth. Beth needs no, I mean, someone can Google Beth Huff and they're going to find lots of stuff about
you. Bless
their hearts. But where can we find your book? Your book's amazing.
The book is on Amazon.
Yeah. Lead Like a Pirate.
I don't even know where the education section is at Barnes and Noble anymore. I tried to find it the other day, but it's in Barnes and Noble a lot of times too. But Amazon's the best place to get it. And then on the Twitter, Beth Huff, and Instagram. I'm working on Instagram.
I can't get into Instagram.
I'm trying because that's what the people.
Girls,
the younger generation. Yeah,
right, but I'm working on
Blake
it.
Blake tells us all the time, you guys got to be on that.
I'm on it, and I made me some stories today and all that. So I'm working on it. And then BethHuff@gmail.com is my email. I try to keep it.
Yeah, very simple.
H-O-U-F, though.
H-O-U-F. Yeah.
No matter how many times, there's only four letters. Multiple variations, though.
So. Yeah, there is. That's
That's
right. Well, thank you, friend.
Well, thank you. It's been great.
It's always good to catch up. 100%. We'll do this again.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds fabulous.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.